Episode 42 for Thomas Matters Radio. This is Mark Collier, sponsor today. Omega Processing Solutions, headquartered right here in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. When it comes to qualifying for low fees, the general rule of thumb is that the more information, the better. And nowhere is this more true than with B2B transactions, especially with Omega Processing Solutions. I deal with this all the time as a business. I need a processor that's going to handle credit cards and take that off of my plate. So I use Omega Processing Solutions. If you're a business, a small business or a large business, I don't know how they do it, but they know how to do it better than anybody else. They can charge less for your rates, which means that that's more profit in your pockets. If you're a small business owner and you're offering credit card solutions and you're not talking to Omega Processing Solutions, you're doing it wrong, guys. Give them a call, 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, extension 7. You can also reach them locally at 442-8100. That's 442-8100. Let's go. So we're back, and we have Councilman Jeff Beasold on the show today. Jeff has been a first-time city council candidate, won and took office in January 1st of 2015. So he is episode number 42. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What do you think about the intro music?
It's questionable.
You're not feeling Pac?
If there were some lyrics, maybe, but the...
I can't have the lyrics because then I'll get sued.
Well, there you go. So I guess it'll suit you then. It's good.
Well, I appreciate you being on today. This is part of the Informed Citizens Project. We are going to record all podcasts with our council members that are running again. All six are incumbents are running. There's going to be three challengers this year on the ballot, which will make up nine total. So Jeff has his op-ed, his intro op-ed that he's written for Fort Thomas Matters. That's at the 2016 election coverage tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. So we're not going to get too much into, Jeff, your intro, who you are, your family, that kind of thing. People can read that stuff. But real quick, we are going to talk about it briefly.
Okay.
Family, where you grew up, why you're running, professional stuff. Try to roll that into a minute.
Okay.
Go.
Grew up all over town. I actually lived in a couple different places through Fort Thomas. Went away to school, went to Western, came back, met my wife at the pub, along with probably a lot of other people met their spouses at the pub. Her name's Denise. She's from Northern Ohio. We have three beautiful little girls, Lily, Isabella, Harper, and the youngest are twins.
Thank God they don't look like their father.
They look like their mother. Yep. They're going to act like their father though, which is probably,
that's not scary. Good. Not good for Denise, but go ahead.
Not good for anybody. worked for Johnson & Johnson. I sell medical supplies, medical devices in the sports medicine arena. What else did you
want? Why are you running?
Why am I running? Well, it's...
Why are you running? Well, let me ask you this. Was there any question? Obviously, you ran last time, and we've got the reasons that you ran, that you wrote in your op-ed. Was there ever a question to whether you're going to run again?
No.
So why are you running again?
I feel like the first time around it's like a learning experience. We're finally, now the new guys are finally able to kind of realize what they've been doing and what they have access to and how the whole system works. By no means are we done learning that system, but we have a better grasp on it now than what we did when we first started.
So one of the, and what I'm trying to do is kind of string a common thread through all these podcasts. So a lot of these questions, I've already asked, experiences that I want to talk about. So one of the things that is common throughout these podcasts is I want to give my personal experience to how I became familiar with each of you guys.
Okay.
So what I remember about Jeff Beasold was growing up at the swim club, and Jeff Beasold was like crazy good swimmer. Like, I remember that for some reason. You've got some records there still, right?
The records that are on the wall are the relays.
Okay.
So we had
who was on your relay? It was like Gracie,
Steve Gracie, Jonathan Waldemeyer, myself, and then it was it rotated. It was Sean Desmond, Ben Messmer was involved in there at some point. I think maybe I might be getting this confused with the high school, but Ben Fowler. But I think I'm confusing that with the
high school. So I'm going to date you a little bit. Okay. How long have those been on the wall at the swim club?
80s.
So it's been a while.
Late 80s. And they're never going to come down.
Is it free or a medley relay?
Both.
Both?
We have both relays.
So where were you? Which leg did you run in the free?
Jonathan Waldemeyer was the speed demon. So he was always anchor. I don't remember all the details, but the four of us were pretty head to head. Jonathan always he always beat all of us pretty good. But me, Gracie, and then Sean, or me, Gracie, and Ben were all pretty even. Steve and I were very competitive with each other, but we knew we weren't going to catch Jonathan.
So you can find Jeff a lot of times still in at the Fort Thomas Swim Club or the Vernon Swim Club.
We are members of both. We finally got into this Fort Thomas Swim Club last year.
So did we, yeah.
Been 9 years of waiting.
Got on in 2006. Crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Can I put a suggestion? I know you have, this has nothing to do with Fort Thomas City Council, but, you know, it can't hurt.
Well, let's make it clear that it has this Fort Thomas Swim Club.
Zero.
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 To do with Fort Thomas Council.
We should be able to, and I know they can do this because Fort Mitchell does it. We should be able to sell our bonds, our swim club bonds, with our homes. Just saying. We don't have to get into it.
Well,
but
there is a fine young man by the name of Brandon Barlow, who is the president of the board of the Fort Thomas Swim Club.
And Mrs. Brandon Barlow, Ashley Barlow, advertiser for Thomas Matters. So thank you for letting me drop that right now.
There you go.
Ashley thanks you too.
There you go.
So what I want to do is just kind of talk about what you accomplished over the last year and almost 5 months now. So let's just start there. So what's some of the biggest accomplishments that you feel like you've come into since you've had your time on council?
Accomplishments is kind of I'm going to reply in a very broad manner because there's nothing specific that we have really tackled that wasn't a part of the process or wasn't a part of the process before we were involved.
Right.
The education and the learning part is a big bonus that we are, you know, a year and a half in, almost 2 years in. So moving forward, we'll be able to be a little swifter with decisions and understanding and the process and all that kind of stuff. And me personally with having the year and a half or almost, you know, almost two under my belt, I'm able to realize how everything works. And once I have a slogan, you can't figure out you don't know how to work the system unless you know how the system works.
Right.
So now that I kind of have an understanding, that's where the ideas start to come in, and that's where the being able to make suggestions and really get my opinion inserted, because I think it might have been a little bit too premature previous to having the year and a half under my belt.
So do you think, and obviously we've the three challengers now at this point are. They would be all first time council members too. You think that gives you an advantage now over them?
No, I don't. I think that you know, the incumbent is a powerful position just for, well, name recognition, but then also because you're up there, and unless you're doing something that somebody disapproves of, then it's usually not a bad thing. But with this city, the way that it's set up and the residents. It's a pretty close-knit group. You know, one name doesn't necessarily mean more than the other. Just because you're there now doesn't mean that you're going to be there tomorrow. So.
Well, and two, like to your point, you know, we grew up here. We have probably more knowledge of the inner workings of how things work now, me being a part of the media and you being, you know, a politician or a city council person, an elected position at this point. But I think it's surprising even now, even with as much access to people and the platforms that we have, I meet new people in Fort Thomas every day.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot bigger. Oh, you know, yeah. It feels close, but it's the biggest city in Campbell County.
Yep.
16,000 people. So I guess from that, you know, how do you make sure that you're representing everybody? Is it, you know, do you rely on a small network? Do you rely on communications from constituents? How do you make your decisions?
It's tough to make everybody happy, 100% of the people happy 100% of the time.
Right.
Right. So I feel the reason that I was voted into the position that I was voted into is because of the people that know me and know my values and my personality and what I believe in and the paths that I will take sitting in the behind the desk in this chair. So I base a lot of the stuff off of me, of how I would want things to go as a resident, as a taxpayer, as somebody who lives in this city who is directly affected by decisions that
sure.
the council makes. But a extremely large part of my decision-making process is reaching out to individuals and not the same small group every time. If I have something that I, an idea or a thought or a, or something that I need to run past somebody, want to get a second opinion, I am not afraid to reach out and, you know, send out an email blast or send out a couple phone calls or take somebody out and have a couple cocktails, go to the Midway District and go to the pub and sit there and talk to Bob and the business owners and see what they have to say about ideas that are generating and things that are happening. So
we'll pivot a little bit, and you talked about the Midway District, and you've mentioned this in your op-ed and as part of the visioning process that the city is going through right now. You have been, you know, a little bit more vocal on how to help local business, and particularly the Midway District. And one thing that we touched on Fort Thomas Matters was the zip line idea and how maybe that could be a draw from to bring those that aren't necessarily within the city limits to mm-hmm. come here and then spend their day in that district. So talk about that a little bit.
It's unfortunate, but the middle of town has been kind of a black hole, for lack of a better term, for restaurants. I mean, there's been a rotation of restaurants that come in and out of there. And I think part of that is because there was no supporting business around it. And Debbie in the Renaissance Group, they're doing a great job on bringing businesses in there. And I think that in the future, all that's going to be different. So restaurants in the middle of town, I think, are going to start surviving and flourishing. Now, when you're talking about the Midway District, the staple down there, there's a couple staples. You got Midway, you got the pub, and you got Fort Thomas Pizza. And now you have a couple other restaurants that are going in there as well, with the Chinese restaurant, Chinese buffet. And then, is that it? Is that the only one?
I think that's the only restaurant. But then you had Sorelli's moved out, and the martial arts place took Sorelli's spot. Yeah. But then there's some spaces down there that are for sale right now too.
Yeah. And Fort Thomas Pizza was able to expand twice. They went from the bar to the back of the bar to the side. So the businesses are doing well down there. And I think the more similar businesses that you can bring is only going to help everybody there. I don't think that there's some thought out there that if we put another bar or restaurant down here, then it's going to take away from the other ones. And I don't think that's the case. As somebody who, I wouldn't say frequents that area often, but I've been known to go and have a nice cold Coors Light every now and again. And I would like to be able to make a whole night of that, you know, start at one end and work your way down, do a little mini Fort Thomas pub crawl in the area.
I did that. I'm not kidding you. I did that for the first time. Probably last winter, we started at karaoke at Fort Thomas Pizza, made our way down to the pub, had some barbecue, and then ended the night at Midway. Mm-hmm. And it had never really occurred to me to do that before.
Yeah.
But I did it And it was almost by accident that we did it. I mean, we didn't set out to do that, but those nights are kind of the ones that turned out to be the best
ones.
And I'll tell you, you've hit on something, I think.
If we did the same thing, I mean, if you add other options there, it's going to bring more people to the area. In my personal opinion, it's going to bring more people to the area to do just that. You know, the pub has its own draw. Four Times Pizza has its own draw, and the Midway has its own draw. And you're going to start getting people that are going to come from either from inside the city or outside the city just to go and do the little mini Four Times pub crawl, because it's great. I mean, there are three phenomenal options down there that all offer something very unique and very special, and it's a great opportunity. So this summer, I will be doing many, many Four Times pub crawls.
I think you should set up some campaign stops there.
I think we probably can do that.
Let me talk about an issue, and I haven't brought this up with anybody else yet, but I feel like your professional background will lead a little bit more. We'll give some more insightful answers. So the VA homes.
Okay.
Talk about your background really quickly about, you know, rehab and that kind of thing, so that people understand where you're coming from.
All right. So as a investment vehicle that I have decided to partake in would be rental property and buying real estate. And I currently own 6 investment properties and rehabbed a couple of them myself and hired a bunch of the stuff out just because I don't have time, because I have a full-time job and I'm a father and a husband and all kinds of stuff. So this has been going on for the last 4 years, maybe, that I've been in the real estate.
Yeah. And business. Just from our personal conversations, I can tell, like, you know what you're talking about. Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is for this question. What the hell is going on? Are we going to get this done?
A big misconception is that it's Four Times. The city is able to just maybe wave a magic wand and it could be done. So my understanding prior to being involved was, what the hell's going on? Why is there nothing going on with these houses? So I took it upon myself when I got into the position to dive in as much as I possibly could with it. The information that I have found out is, everything is not as easy as it seems. So there's a lot more behind the scenes that happen than what the general public knows about. And we talk about it during council meetings sometimes. And on Monday, Ron was talking about the latest update. And the latest update is, you know, we're moving forward, which is the same thing we've heard about for the last couple of years. But Ron and the Four Times staff have done a phenomenal job now that they're trying to get restrictions lifted and timelines moved and moving forward with the contractor. And it's tough because we're dealing with the federal government. We're dealing with a piece of property that's owned by the federal government that cannot be transferred to the public by any means, by sale or gift or whatever. So it has to go through the city. But the city stance is, we are not going to take the hundreds of thousands of dollars / millions of dollars that we need to buy this property in order to turn these things around and be able to sell them to the public, because we're the city as a whole. That's not a profession. We are not real estate investors.
Right.
We are trying to figure out a way to not use taxpayer dollars in any way, shape, or form in order to get this done.
So I guess to right there though. So let's say we earmarked $250,000, $250,000 to, I guess, become somewhat of a bridge to spread that risk a little bit, because I think the appetite and my personal belief of this deal is I don't feel like we should subsidize 17 homes or whatever it ends up being. But there is an appetite, I feel like, for, you know, it's sad that these things have you know, gone the direction that they've gone. And it is sad. But I think that there is an appetite for it. So let's say you try to test the water. So how do you do that? Well, you don't put a ton of money out, but you put some money in. You put some skin in the game. And I've talked with some people with the Catalytic Fund, Joey Clare. We did a podcast on this topic that lasted an hour. Mark Ramler, who is with Mansion Homes. And they basically said that without some city money in the game, there's no magic wand that these developers are going to be able to wave and be able to find money. So I guess my question is, I get that the city doesn't want to be a developer.
It's a choice that we have to make. You know, that's our job, is to kind of really dedicate where funds go. But I don't think a poll's ever been taken, and I would like to see one done, maybe, or maybe even put it on the ballot. I don't know if that's an option or not, but, you know, can we earmark a certain amount of funds? Can we put it on the next election and let the public decide? I don't want to be the guy deciding on a $500,000 gamble on some property just to benefit some developer to sweeten the pot for them. So that's not something that I feel that I want to take responsibility for. Now, if the public wants to do that just to get it done, I could see that too. But at this point, something needs to be done with those houses. And we are doing everything in the city's power with the limited resources that we have. When I say resources, it's funds. And also with the federal government, it's not as easy. Nothing's easy when it comes to the government.
Have you been down there in a while?
Yeah, I've been down there recently, and they roped off everything, and they are falling apart. It's a safety concern. They're falling apart, and something needs to be done. Needs to be done right now.
So sometimes I can kind of take a pulse on what the community is thinking based on the correspondence that I get. Mm-hmm. And I think that first day, and they roped it off with crime scene tape. I mean, it looks
caution tape.
Yeah, it looks like something happened back there. But actually, I went back there, and I think I got maybe 5 or 6 emails in one day. Like, what's happening? What's going on? Went back and talked to the VA security guy. He had said that literally, if you take a step onto some of those porches, they're going to fall in.
Yeah.
He said that a chimney fell off recently. Mm-hmm. So it's getting to the point where we might not be able to make, you know, any type of decision, or the developer might not be able to, because they're deteriorating, and they're deteriorating fast.
I would hate to see
what happens.
The asset, the resource, the history not be salvageable. But I think they might not have been salvageable 15 years ago, because they are in not good shape. And it comes to a point where you need to walk away from being able to restore the houses. And, you know, I'm not a builder. I'm not a developer. I can go through a house and, you know, I could hang some drywall here and there, and I could put some paint on the wall, but that's about it. You know, I don't know first thing about structure. I'm not an engineer. I can't tell you what's salvageable, what's worth fixing. You know, anything can be fixed, but how much money? And I think that's the question here, is what is it going to take to fix these things? No developer is willing to take that risk, because part of the restrictions that the federal government is putting on whoever purchases these properties is, before they're even purchased, I may be incorrect here, but I think I'm pretty 90% sure I'm right. Before they're even purchased, that the asbestos has to be abated. So before the transfer,
That is right.
Before the transfer even happens. So in layman's terms, the way that I take that as somebody who's been a part of this is, this person A, this developer A over here has to pay the money to have the asbestos abated, cleared out. And at that point, it's up to the government to say, okay, now we're going to sign it over to you. Give us our check and here's yours. So who's going to put their money up on something that they don't know? And we're not talking 50 grand here. We're talking a couple $100,000.
So it's asbestos and it's lead paint that both have to be abated. Yeah. So,
and you have the, and I do want to make the point that the city is being as flexible as they possibly can. So we don't have actual revenue dollars put into this, but we have 10 years of manpower. And also, one of the things that the new administration has really been diving into are different options. And Ron's done a great job with coming up with some new ideas. And one of the things would be is we need to run new plumbing and new electric to the Four Times Community Center, aka Mess Hall, anyway. So we will go ahead and sweeten the deal for whoever's going to buy it to help the process hurry up. And we'll just go ahead and run sewer, water, and electric all the way back.
Which is a big deal.
Which is big.
Yeah, that's a lot of expense.
Yep.
And it takes away some uncertainty, to your point, which is why a lot of this, why a developer might not want to get involved in that, because there's a lot of question marks.
Yep.
So if you can take away the utility component, I mean, that is a real deal sweetener.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That the city is putting up.
And it's not taxpayer money that's being used. It's taxpayer money that's being used to pay for the labor, but it's not like we're hiring an outside company to come in and do it.
So. Right. Let's transition away a little bit to, I guess, how decisions are being made on this council. So we're talking about Jeff Beazle, John Mueller, Chuck Thompson, Roger Peterman, Lisa Kelly, Ken Bowman now. This is an either-or question. Does this council, and I guess you can only speak for you on this, is it more important when you're making a decision to build a consensus or, you know, to have a unanimous vote? Or would you rather have a healthy discussion and maybe have a split vote on some things?
Yes. Yes on all of
them. Yes to both.
So, well, yeah. So, to me, at the end of the day, the best decision is what I'm going to answer to. The best decision for me, the best consensus is what I'm going to answer to. In certain situations, though, where it makes sense, where it's a 4-2 vote, it shows camaraderie, shows unification to just go out there with a 6-0 vote.
Sure.
But if it's something that I strongly believe in and feel that I, it might be 4-2 and I'm one of those two, if I strongly believe in it, then I would not just confide and go with the 6-0.
So it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the only really vote that I can think of over, since you guys have been on council that has been somewhat split and had some teeth to the discussion more than anything else was the property tax vote in 2015. And the vote was basically to raise the property taxes as much as is allowable by law, which is the compensating rate, which fluctuates plus 4%. Fort Thomas has always taken that maximum allowable. Mm-hmm. I think the vote ended up turning out to be at that point, that was when Adam Meyer was still on and not Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Jeff Beazle, John Mueller, Roger Peterman, and Ken Bowman on one side. And then to do that, and then Adam Meyer and Lisa Kelly to not raise it that amount.
Correct.
So talk about that process. In general,
that was one of the first big votes that we had as a new group, and everything was foreign. I didn't really know what was going on when we were talking about it, but it was part of my job is to dive in as much as I possibly could and figure out what we were talking about. So, one of the things that I pride myself on is taking a step back and just asking really simple 5,000-foot questions that. You don't have to get so specific if these 5,000-foot questions will answer the need. And what that 4% in addition to the maximum allowable, what that 4% translated into was $70,000 over the year, right? So if to put it in perspective, $70,000 is one bad snowfall. So budgeting that lean is not necessarily something that nobody up there is able to budget that lean.
Sure.
If somebody is able to budget that lean, they're probably in the wrong business. They should be doing something else. So.
But I think this was led by Adam Meyer. So I think his, and obviously he's not here, but to paraphrase his argument was, you know, we've done such a good job at, using your words, budgeting lean over the years, that at some point, whether it's $70,000 or whatever, we come up with a surplus every year. And yeah, I mean, there could be catastrophic events. Last year, there was an emergency peering that we had to do that cost more than $70,000. Yeah. But I think his argument was, we've been so good and so conservative that at some point, you know, we don't need to take that maximum amount.
And one of the misconceptions, and something that Adam, if we ask Adam today, if he would still feel the same way, I can't answer the question for him, but this is different. The details behind it are a little bit different now than what initially we thought. So I'm going to use round numbers here.
Sure.
But the city operates on a $10 million budget, right? Give or take, right? And so the perception was that there was a $10 million surplus. Well, that's not how, again, looking at it from back and just coming in, you would think the way that it's written on paper is there is a $10 million. That's not the case. There's not $10 million in cash.
Yeah.
The revenue and the assets that are considered in this $10 million are concretes on streets.
It breaks down to buildings, roads, and sidewalks. Reserved and unreserved funds.
Well, it's not just funds.
Right.
It's structural things. Structural, literally roads are considered in this $10 million. What we have assets of $10 million bucks, right? That's not dollars and cents. That's not green bills. It's not liquid. No, that is, well, I guess it could be liquid if it's a reservoir or the water tank, but it's we're talking roads and buildings and parks. We're not talking money that we can spend.
So let's move on from that. Where does the majority, and a couple of your contemporaries before this had made mention about where some of the decisions, where the teeth of a lot of these discussions are being made. Some said that council is not necessarily the place where some of these discussions and decisions are being made. So let me ask you this. Where do you feel like most of the decisions are being made on council? Is it at council? Is it on committees? Is it outside of those two? Where do you fall on that?
Well, legally, we can only discuss city matters during advertised city time, advertised meetings, advertised public forums. And so I have not been a part of any decision-making process that's not been either on a committee or in council chambers during a meeting.
Sure.
There are, like you said, there's six or seven different committees that are out that are...
Six committees. You're the chair for Public Works. Yeah.
And then I'm on Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, Public Safety, I think.
Oh, it's, no.
No? I've got it written down somewhere. Oh, wait, it's right here. Beazold is... you're on Public Works. You're the chairman of Utilities.
Yeah, Buildings and Utilities.
Which only comes up...
once every 15 years.
And you got to preside.
And I had to be on it.
Yeah, you got to preside over that one.
That was great.
Let's talk about that real fast. So the main reason for the utilities committee is to renew basically the franchise fees for Duke Energy. Is that right?
That is under the finance committee.
No, I think what it was because you what we and had
that's a committee. The franchise was a committee as a whole.
No, it was just it came up during the utilities because it only came up once every 10 years, and we had to renew something. Because we were in that window, that short window.
But the discussion and vote would be as a committee as a whole.
Right.
Okay.
So the franchise fee is separate from the actual agreement that we had to have that small window, which is why that committee, that utility, doesn't matter why it came up.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the franchise fees. So that would be an alternative to funding the way that we do our streets.
Correct.
The way we do our streets right now is half of it, or a portion of it, is paid from the road aid fund, gas taxes and stuff like that. The other half is from street assessments to direct residents and direct owners on frontage where, you know, the streets are being redone. It was a unanimous vote this year to go ahead and continue with that funding model. But there was some discussion, should we replace this with a franchise fee? Should we mess with the splits, whether it be 50-50 going to 60-40 or 70-30? Obviously, you voted to keep it the same way. Where do you come down on this next year?
So that this is probably one of the hottest discussion topics that the residents of Fort Thomas always ask me about, right? And I would imagine the other committee members and also the mayor. So to me, it's pretty simple. So when my street was being done, it was 3 or 4 years ago, I called Ron Dill and I said, why do I have to pay? Aren't my taxes going towards this? Why do I have to pay for this? I don't want to pay for this. I don't want to pay however many dollars per linear foot that I had. Because I live in Fort Thomas, I want my tax, but it's my, you know, I got high taxes here.
Sure.
Right? So, and we'll talk about that in a second too, because we're not high, we're middle of the road city taxes. It's the school tax that takes us over.
Well, I think people know that. Keep going.
Everybody knows that. Okay. That's a big one. So, the simple answer was we can do more streets that way. Actually, the simple answer was that's always how we've always done it. And so that's how we're going to do it. I didn't like that answer. And so that's one of the reasons that drove me to run for council, because I wanted to know why I got that answer. I was not real happy with that. And I've talked about Ron with that. Rock talked with Ron about that, and that answer, I wasn't real happy with that. But basically, with the assessment, we're able to do more streets. We're able to keep our streets in pristine condition. We're able to keep our streets up to date, not having potholes all over the place, not having cracks. Without it, we could do, you know, again, rough estimate, one or two streets a year. With it, we're able to do 4 to 6 streets a year.
So let me ask you this. And this got brought up during the franchise fee component. Did you ever look at actual projections if, basically doing if-then assessment, if we get rid of the street assessment program as we know it, then we have to replace it with franchise fee. And with that, you don't make that decision without looking at hard numbers. Did you actually see any numbers on that?
We did. They weren't hard numbers. They were estimate numbers, but there were some numbers presented, and basically what it ended up being is we could replace the assessment with the franchise fee. So every energy, I guess it was Duke Energy customer in the city, inside the city limits, would pay a portion or a percentage of their Duke bill to subsidize, or I guess exchange for the assessment. Basically, it's trading one tax for another. It's still there. It's still got to get paid from somewhere.
Which we do pay right now anyway. It's extremely small. I think it's like 0.03% that's on our Duke bills now, which is... we already pay that right now. It's just tiny. Most cities pay up to about 5%.
Yeah, much greater.
Yeah.
Much greater percentage. So we were going to, the thought was to increase that percentage slightly, still not be up to where most other cities in the region are, but that money there would go to subsidize the street resurfacing program and not have assessments.
So basically, the way I look at it is, it comes down to, I mean, you're going to pay for it anyway, right? You got to, as city council people now, you've got to weigh what's better. Paying one big check once every 20 years, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. Or do you pay an infinitesimally smaller amount every month?
Forever.
Forever.
Yeah,
and that's basically what you got to weigh.
And there's also the component of apartment complexes. The property owners right now are on the hook for their street frontage.
Assessment, yeah.
But it would, you know, if it went the other way with the franchise fee, say like Gettysburg Square, they have a lot of residents there. So those residents would all be have.
They would chip in with the franchise fee. They're not chipping in now, or
it might be part of the Gettysburg's budget on how much they charge for rent. Sure. They may potentially be chipping in, but they're not. You know, they're not paying. They'd be paying same percentage as everybody else on their Duke bill.
So like last year, there's not that many properties on Churchill Drive. I think there's a church and. There's apartments there.
Yeah, condos or something.
Yeah, so like that guy came in at the public hearing last year, and I think his bill was like $5,400. And he said, which he was only getting charged, it wasn't even a 50-50 split.
It was 50% of what it would have been if it was only being resurfaced.
But the total bill was still
$5,400.
Yeah. I mean, it was a large chunk, and we wrote about that. If you Google Fort Thomas Matters tax hearing or something like that, his quotes are in there. So he obviously got stung on that one. I think the main issue with this is that there's the way it's set up is there's inequities, right? So like the neighbor next to you that's on the corner lot could be paying $2,000 where you're paying $500 and you're basically getting the same benefit. So I think that's where the other issue lies. It's just not pay now or pay later, but some of the inequities based on the system that we have is
based on road frontage. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I can see benefits and negatives either way. I also could see this as black and white, but I could also see it as gray. You know, black and white would be, you're a resident, you know, it's here, you know, that's how we do it. You know, that's how it's been. You know, that's how it's probably going to be.
I didn't know that until,
to be fair, I didn't know it either. And so there's the gray part, right? Yeah. So black and white, you know, that it's there, it's always been there. And it probably always will be. And then the gray part is, well, I didn't know, but
now people should know.
Not an excuse, and
now people should know that
with the help of Mark Collier and Fort Thomas Matters, that's right. Everybody should know.
You don't get a pass anymore, new people that are coming in. You should know this.
Now, it's still open for discussion, and if the residents feel that they want it changed, please come to the meetings and express your interest in having it changed. I mean, that's the beauty about the way that our city is set up and the way that the you know, council and I hate to use the word politics, but I guess we have to use the word politics.
Are you a politician now?
I am not a politician. Okay. I'm a man of the people that got voted in a political election.
I buy it. Of probably all the council people. Can I say this? Yeah, I can say this. Well, no, I think you and a lot, pretty much all of the council people I can have beers with. So they're all cool.
I think you could enjoy a beer with multiple
council people. I have, yeah, and I do. I'm just saying, you know, like.
Our backgrounds are very similar.
Yeah. We were both in the same fraternity at different schools. Both president of those fraternities.
Yeah.
And both got in the swim club at the same time.
You like a different brand of beer, but the same distributor.
Yeah.
Same distributor.
Miller Coors. There you go. So a couple more questions, and this is a question that I'm asking everybody. I feel like as a councilman, there's certain things that's a baseline, like easy things that you can do. And one of those things I feel like is showing up for council. So I'm asking everybody, barring family emergencies or something like that, would you pledge to be at every council meeting that you can, starting January 1st, 2017, ending December 31st, 2019?
That's the plan.
That's the plan. Okay.
That's the plan. I mean, like you said, barring emergencies, but there's also work restrictions. And when we're only meeting once a month, so missing a meeting is not easy. It's not ideal. But sometimes it has to happen. Sometimes it has to happen.
When you ran, and you said there was no question, you were always going to run this time. When you ran the first time in 2014, who were two or three people outside of your family that
you asked, hey, should I do this? What do you think?
The current councilman, Tom Lampe.
Current county commissioner,
but he was county council at the time. I apologize. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. And his advice to me was to make sure I'm doing it for the right reasons. And then I spoke with the other council people. I spoke with Lisa Kelly, and she basically said the same thing. Spoke with, you said outside my family, a lot of friends, a lot of residents, just people that I would run into, acquaintances, business owners, and pretty consistent response across the board. That they would have my support. Now, if they actually support me, I don't know.
Well, you had the highest vote totals last year.
That's correct. That's why I decided to run again. See if they want me back in there or not.
In some cities, that actually means something. Like in Dayton, if you get the highest amount, you're the vice mayor. Are you gonna politic for that?
No.
No.
I don't politic.
Okay. All right.
I don't politic.
We don't know each other. We've got 20 seconds. We're in an elevator together. You need my vote. Go.
Hey, I'm Jeff Bezos.
He's shaking my hand right now.
Shaking his hand, yeah. Strong eye contact, too. I'm running for 4-time city council. I'm up for re-election after my first term. I feel like we're doing some really good things up there. If you have any questions that you'd like to ask me about where I stand on anything, please feel free to do so. But I would appreciate your support. Let me know if you need a ride to the election box.
There you go. There's no electioneering rules on that, by the way. Jeff Bezold, thank you so much for being on the show. Like I said, you can always find Jeff Bezold's introduction op-ed at the 2016 election tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. Jeff also had a little snippet in the Fort Thomas Living in the, I guess that would have been the April edition. So, Jeff, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
That'll conclude another edition of Fort Thomas Matters Radio. We are now about halfway through our Informed Citizen Project. We are doing podcasts, of course, with all the city council incumbents and challengers. I hope to have all 9 completed before I publish them. So hopefully that will be by the end of April, so you guys can start hearing those starting May 1st. Of course, if you want to subscribe to our Fort Thomas Matters radio channel, you can do that at fortthomasmatters.podbean.com. The easiest way to do it is probably on your iPhone or similar device. Just go to the podcast app. Search Fort Thomas Matters and hit subscribe. And every notification, every time we come up with a new podcast, you'll be notified. What really helps us is if you rate that podcast and if you leave a comment, that way other people can find it a lot easier. So again, for Jeff Bezold, our sponsor, Omega Processing Solutions, this is Mark Collier, Fort Thomas Matters Radio.